Good morning, everyone, and welcome. We do have a few announcements beforehand. We do have two substitutions. We have Miss Sherry Gammon Walsh, the Placentia St. Mary's and St. John's Center, Jim Dinn, stepping in this morning. Thank you so much. The time allocation and so on, we'll certainly look at probably taking a break if we need one, somewhere around 10:15. We're going to start our questions and debate with it'll be the official opposition, third party, official opposition, third party, and independent member, in that order. We need to remind the witnesses to identify themselves before you speak. For Hansard, and wait for the tally light before speaking. And I know the last time we were here, there were some issues getting the light to come on and so on, but hopefully that'll be okay today. If the light doesn't come on, wave to identify yourself, so we'll need that. The minutes of the previous meeting, do you have a copy? Everybody has a copy? Yep. Okay. Are there any revisions or amendments to those meetings? Those minutes, I'm sorry. Can I have a mover to accept the minutes as presented? Okay. Moved by Mr. O'Driscoll. So the minutes are moved by Mr. O'Driscoll. All in favor? Carried. I'm going to ask now people to identify themselves and then before we begin. So we'll start on this side.
Lyle O'Driscoll, the Scenic District of Fairland.
Jim Dinn, the Scenic District of St. John's Center.
Perry Trimper, MHA for Lake Melville.
Stephen Kent, researcher for Third Party Caucus.
Megan Winter, researcher with the Official Opposition Caucus.
Sherry Gammon Walsh, MHA for Placentia St. Mary's.
My name, by the way, is Paul Pike, a member for Bjorn Grand Bank.
Sean Dutton, I'm Deputy Minister of Department of Digital Government and Service NL.
Hello, I'm Sarah Studley, Minister of Digital Government and Service NL and MHA for the Economic Powerhouse District of Mount Zio.
Hello, Dave Heffernan, I'm the Associate Deputy Minister for Digital Government and the Chief Information Officer.
Gail Bolin, Assistant Deputy Minister for Digital Government and Services.
Bonnie Steele, Departmental Controller.
Scott Jones, Assistant Deputy Minister, Regulatory Affairs, Digital Government, Service NL.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll start.
.1.1.01 to 1.2.03, Executive and Support Services.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.104, inclusive, carry? Okay, so Minister.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. I'd like to, give you a kind of an introduction to the department for those of you listening at home and those of us in the room. So I also wanted to say thank you so much to all the teams here in the House of Assembly today, spending Thursday morning with us, the chair, the staff. I'd like to thank Digital Government and Service NL staff for you know, all their work on the budget, getting everything together. You know, Bonnie, our controller, you know, all the financial stuff that she has, you know, I'm sure thousands of pages behind the estimates that you see here today. I'd also like to say a special thanks to the Queen's printer staff, who I know during budget time stay up all night printing the budget speech, the estimates, and they get, you know, they're kind of the last cog in the wheel in terms of getting all the budget documents for everyone. So I just want to say a special thank you to them as well. So I guess this is my, I think, 10th month in Digital Government and Service NL, and it's been a wild ride and, you know, learning all about the department and I guess my area of expertise in my past life, but then expanding to lots of new areas. Someone once described this department to me as the lint trap of the provincial government. So if something doesn't fit in some department, guaranteed it's in Digital Government and Service NL. Historically, it's been an amalgamation where parts of resident-facing services across all departments kind of gather within our department, and we find that we enforce a lot of legislation and regulations that are maintained in other departments, but we have the resident-facing enforcement side. So, you know, we do a lot of licensing, inspections. We're responsible for, you know, enforcement of public health and public safety. So, you know, there's, you know, lots of public safety acts in other departments, but we enforce those acts. We have vital documents, so, you know, birth certificates, marriage certificates, all that kind of stuff, and vital statistics, which I'm sure we'll get to. Occupational health and safety, which is a huge part of what we do in the department. You know, making sure that workplaces follow all the rules, making sure that, that staff have a complaints procedure in place and that's followed. One of our, I guess, most visible parts is Motor Registration Division, again, as I'm sure we'll get into in detail. The staff there, I guess, over two seasons, two high peak seasons, have had to completely change the way that they deliver services to residents of the province, going from, you know, just 2 years ago, a fully, a model where people show up and then you have a waiting room full of people, to a complete shift to, you know, an appointment system offering then services through phone and Dropbox, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that later on. We have, I've been responsible for shared services, which has recently transitioned to this department, and so some of the areas that have amalgamated so far includes collections, and there's also been some back office functions, and as we, you know, as the government takes over the NLASD and NILCHI, we expect, you know, in the short term, some of those things to progress as well. Digital Government and Service NL, we make a lot of money for the provincial government. So, well, we have a budget of $26 million, and in the estimates, you'll see $9.1 million in revenue. But what's not reported in our estimates is the $133.8 million in revenue that our department brings in that just goes into general revenues that we don't see in the estimates. So that's everything from, you know, the motor registration fees that people pay when they, you know, renew their vehicle, to inspection, to electrical permits, for example, if you're getting an electrical permit, the fees for that. And then we have, you know, we're responsible for all the financial services legislation. So if you're a mortgage broker, you pay a fee. If you are, you know, an investment dealer, you pay a fee. And so all those kind of revenues fall within our department, but don't get, most of which don't get shown in our estimates in terms of revenues. And so I guess our department have had to pivot drastically during COVID-19, and hopefully we're on the edge of that. But we get to hopefully keep a lot of the efficiencies that we've gained and the learnings around how to deliver services differently to match what residents are looking for. You know, we've seen 98% of motor registration vehicle renewals happen online, which is outstanding. I would have never guessed, you know, that we could achieve, you know, that kind of level, 98%, just on resident demand alone. You know, we're not doing anything really to push people to online, but it's been amazing. And we have 92% of people renewing their driver's license online. So we also have the Office of French Services, and I'm a minister of responsible for Francophone Affairs as well. That's a small team responsible for training and translations and translation services. So we are kind of the you know, we do some services in French. We've added to our French services this year. A lot of what they do is working with the federal government. We spend money from the federal government in helping progress French services. We also are responsible for the Queen's printer. I mentioned that, but it's an important part. So they do all the printing for not only provincial government, but for Eastern Health, for example, and that's at no cost to any of the departments. So it's a bit of an interesting challenge because people just ask us for printing and we don't say no. And, you know, all that cost is incurred within our department. But, you know, we've been trying to make sure that people, you know, really need what they're going to print. And, we're not wasting paper and we only printing what necessary. And I think we're getting there. So overall, it's a very interesting department with many, many different facets, and I look forward to diving into each one in more detail with you all this morning. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that update. Certainly my pleasure to be here this morning. Last year I didn't get to attend. I was off sick last year. It wasn't COVID, which we were hoping it wasn't. It wasn't just the flu. But it was off for a week. I missed estimates. So after being here the previous time, I'm going to say this is a little more learning experience for me. After the first time I came in, I was inundated and had no idea what it was when I came in here. Not that I know it now, but it's just a different, different learn, I'm going to say. And from the previous minister, or the previous person that filled in last year, and when I started as a critic for this role, he did say that you'll start with a birth certificate and end with a death certificate. He said so everything in between. And I would say being here, and this being the start of the third year, I'm going to say that there's most legislation, I think, in this department, because there's people that we had on our side when we were speaking on legislation last year when you had it, that when one of the other people in our caucus had said, how does that work? I said, what do you mean, how does it work? He said, well, I haven't done one before. I said, geez, I've been doing 7 or 8 since I came here, and they haven't done one. So it's a lot of legislation, and, it might be just minor tweak, but there's still a lot of legislation. So if I'll get started, I just wonder if we could obtain a copy of the minister's binder when we're finished.
Yep. Cool.
All right. Just some general questions first, I'm going to say. Is the attrition plan still being followed? And if so, what are the changes from last year to this year?
So the attrition plan is being followed. So in 2020 to 2021, we had 82,500 in savings, and in the upcoming year, we anticipate 82,100 in savings, and we are meeting our attrition plan. If anyone else wants to? Okay. Thank you.
How many retirements have occurred in the last year?
8 retirements.
How many?
8.
Yeah, okay. And how many people are employed in your department, whether it be permanent, seasonal, temporary, and contracted out?
We have 438 positions in digital government and service NL. That's not including staff with us through the Opening Doors program.
Okay, and how many vacancies are not filled in this department?
Do you have that, Bob? Do you have the top of hand? Okay, Sean?
Yeah, Sean Dutton. There are, out of the 449 positions, 401 were filled as of April 1st, and 48 were vacant at the time. I can say I've signed quite a number of board reports since that number was compiled.
Thank you. Do I have to keep saying my name when it comes back to me?
No.
No, okay. All right. How many positions have been eliminated, and what are they?
I don't have that to hand, but we can certainly get it to you. I don't know if one of the team. Yep. Okay. Yeah, we can get that for you.
Okay. And how many layoffs have occurred in the department in the last year?
We haven't had any layoffs.
Okay. And how many new hires took place in the last year?
6 new hires.
6. How many contractual and short-term employees are in your department?
So we have 15 active short-term hires at the moment. And sorry, what was the other question?
The short-term employee, contractual and short-term
employees. Oh, contract. So we have 7 contract staff.
Okay. Did your department receive any funds from the COVID fund? And if so, what for?
I'm not aware of any funds that we've received from the COVID fund.
Okay. How has COVID impacted service delivery? And can you please speak about any backlogs which are occurring with the various branches within your department, I guess?
Sure. So I guess COVID has significantly impacted our department. Motor registration, for example, we've completely changed how we deliver services. It used to be that you showed up any day of the week and sat and waited in the waiting room for an hour all day, maybe, to get an appointment. And so we've shifted to a model where there's multiple channels to get things done. One is you can book an appointment online and to book an appointment to come into our office. You can do things by phone, by Dropbox, and we're trying to drive as many people online as possible for the services available online. You can also do transactions by email, and we're working on, improving that. Our government services centers closed, I think, during level 5, but they're all reopened now. I guess another thing that would have impacted our department is, for example, inspections. So we do a range of inspections, and during level 5, for example, we wouldn't have gone out to do any non-urgent inspections. And so once then things started opening up at level 4 and level 3, we then prioritize all the inspections and then do like the most, the highest priority ones. And then I'll look to the team to talk about, I guess, if how far, whether we've caught up yet, or hello, Gail? Anything else you can think of? Oh, yeah.
Just wait. Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Thanks. Gail Boland. We've done a number of things, as Minister Sudley has identified. So we also put online your learner's permit. That was an initiative that happened the fall. And we also made some adjustments to some of the requirements as it relates to MRD. So, for example, under alert level 5, nobody was, due to public health, there were nobody coming into the building. So photo IDs were suspended temporarily for anybody who needed a new photo for their driver's license. We also temporarily suspended like routine medical reports. So those are some of the things that we had changed. In terms of backlog, we're still working through, some of the in-car driver testing, the road testing. But for the most part, I think we have addressed all of them, as well as the photo IDs. And recently, too, with respect to the front counter service in Mount Pearl, we've been doing a lot of reconfiguration in respect of the public health guidelines. And we've recently, in the more higher alert levels, when we were allowed to open to the public, we would have 3 front counters being serviced. And now we've actually opened them all. And as a consequence, within the last 2 weeks, we were able to add another 35 appointments per day at Mount Pearl.
Okay. Yep.
I'll just mention a few other things. So, for example, the Registry of Deeds, we had to shut, some of our those types of services during Level 5 and then gradually reopened them, on an appointment basis or things like that. But all those other types of services are open now. And I don't know if, Scott, you wanted to add anything or...
Scott Jones. So for the minister mentioned the commercial registry. So there was 2 aspects of it. There's the registration of the deeds and corporate registration, and there's also the search. So the registration side of it is mostly continued except for obviously during the lockdown at level 5. But staff have been available and there to continue the registration process where companies would send their corporate information or individual would send their deeds information, again, through either the mail or courier or Dropbox. So that's all being registered and is available online for searches, except for significantly old documents are still remained printed in the registry. And so then there's an appointment system in place, as the minister mentioned, for individuals and professionals and lawyers and deed searchers to come in and search those records.
So permits online for, you did the permits online for new drivers. So is that open again now that they go in and do it, or is that still online, or both?
Oh, it's both, yeah.
Both, okay.
So I think they only stopped in person for a short while.
Yeah.
We are finding a lot more people doing them online now. I can give you the numbers. Let's see. Sorry, we have so many services online.
Yeah.
So.
No problem.
I should have it here. Anyway, we can get that for you. Sorry.
You can give me mention when you phone me. You just say it when you speak.
Okay.
Did your department receive any funds from the contingency fund? If so, what was it for?
No, we didn't receive any funds. Dave, we have the numbers.
Dave Heffernan. So for online driver's exams, we've had 19,560 people attempt to do their exam online.
Okay. Last year in Estimates, we talked about a joint project with the federal government. I believe it was called the Debt Notification Project. Could you please give me some more information on this project, and is it still underway?
I'm going to pass that over to Dave to give an update.
Dave Heffernan. So the Electronic Debt Notification Project is still underway. It's a combination project between the Department of Digital Government and Service NL. And it's in Scott's area, and it's also combined with the Office of the CIO. So it's a joint effort then with the federal government. Federal government has provided funding for it. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's scheduled to clue up in August.
Yeah. Scott Jones. The significant work is to clue up in August on it. It's been... they're in the final stages now with respect to dealing with some information from NILCHI that would facilitate the conclusion of the process, of the progress. Total implementation is expected in 21-22, but the internal work is with negotiations with and contact with the funeral directors, funeral homes, is expected to clue up by August.
And what happens after the implementation is over? How's the process from there? How does it proceed from there? Is there, you know, the funding is finished, so what goes on from there?
Scott Jones. So it's basically a change from the current process of just printed documents, you know, signatures and forms to an online process. So there's no additional costs to be incurred by anybody. All the costs related to this initiative is going to be covered through this federal funding that is being provided. And it allows for, like I said, an online delivery of information on deaths to the vital statistics from the funeral homes or from the health provider, the hospital. That, you know, it'll allow a 15-day timeline to be able to communicate that information to CRA and the federal government as required for their purposes, which is why the federal government is funding this initiative, and Newfoundland Labrador is the first that the federal government has partnered with on this.
Okay, thank you. The budget speech reads, in an increasingly digital world, now more than ever, citizens expect that governments be initiative and deliver faster, easier access to services in a secure manner. This year, we build on the success of MyGovNL and take further steps to improve service delivery to ensure better interactions with government. Could you please outline the plans to do this?
Sure, thank you. So this is kind of Digital Government and Service NL and OCIO, and it's kind of both under me, and I know we're going to talk about OCIO this afternoon. So we have a digital team. There's a few different teams, but one of them works on MyGovNL specifically, and we have a big backlog of services, so they do one, and they do the next, and they do the next, and we try to prioritize based on resident, you know, value to residents, and then also like internal efficiencies, importance to the departments. We also have an internal team working on, more commercial facing. So, you know, like applying for permits and things like that, where, if you're, a contractor, you can apply online for a permit. And so those types of things, there's another team working on those. So We don't have, you know, a huge budget or anything for this. It's mostly money that, you know, we're finding internally, or, you know, we're stopping doing things to fund additional services online for residents. Dave, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Dave Heffernan. So the minister's correct. There's a team working on an upgrade of our, what we call an Amanda platform, but it's a licensing and permitting platform that will allow us to put 30 to 40 new services online that aren't online today. So that's one part of it. Minister mentioned there's a number of services that sort of roll out as we go through the project. We don't have a predefined list that says we're going to do 10 of these. We're always looking at what makes most sense at the right time. So there's a list of those that we're working through this year, and we're in the process of upgrading the MyGovNL platform because it's been there now for close to 2 years, I guess, and it's so basically we're going to the next version of that platform, which will allow us to put more business-facing services online as well, which we don't have that today. It's mostly resident-facing. So,
okay, thank you. Also, the budget speech reads, we're also embarking on a process to maintain and improve service delivery through joint solutions, in partnership with business, social enterprise, and other organizations to more effectively deliver facilities management and provincial registries. I note that provincial registries are mentioned here and that the department is responsible for many of them. Could you please outline any changes or analysis you're carrying out on the provincial registries and changes you're considering?
I know our time is up, but you can answer that question in a moment.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So I'll answer. I'll probably throw to Sean as well to fill in anything I've missed. But so absolutely. So we have multiple registries in our department. Motor registration is the big one. We have registry of deeds, you know, commercial registries. And so we, over the next, you know, coming months, we will be looking at, you know, doing RFPs or RFIs or whatever to kind of go out to the community to see if anyone can help us do that better. You know, I know Minister Cody has mentioned multiple times, you know, whether it be a social enterprise or a union or, you know, a private company, looking at if we can leverage some of their expertise and their systems, for example, to offer the service to residents at better value for taxpayers. You know, I've been looking at this a lot personally. You know, I know Alberta has gone back and forth between having a, you know, a private run versus a public run motor registration. Nova Scotia, I think, has just done an analysis and they've decided not to go, you know, they've decided to keep it internally because some of the big consideration is, you know, the back-end system. So for us, for motor registration, our back-end system is very old. It needs updating. You know, a lot of the new things we want to do for residents in terms of, you know, license plates and all that, we really need a new system to do that. But, you know, a new system is tens of millions of dollars. And so, you know, is there a way that perhaps we can leverage a vendor or, you know, an outside company who's doing this in another province to maybe offer that to provide better value to taxpayers? But again, we're just going to be looking at that option. And, you know, I know as other provinces have learned, you know, in the end, maybe we'll decide to keep it internally. Maybe we'll decide to, you know, have a partner come in and help us with that. But that's what we're going to be looking at over the coming months.
Okay, Sean? Thank you. No, I'm going to have to cut up there now, and we can get back to it after.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Is that fine with you? Chair recognizes Mr. Reed and Mr. Warr, who've joined the meeting. Thank you. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, just in case I don't get to do this at the end, thank you for appearing and for answering the questions, and certainly thank you for the work you're doing, especially during COVID. Just a few questions leading into this. I find it interesting that, Minister, you call it, your department, the lint trap, and yet we all know that a lint trap in a dryer, you didn't have in a dryer, you'd probably have a lot more house fires. So I'd like to think, you know, that it performs a very valuable service, lint trap or otherwise, whatever you call it. Highway cameras. I know last year that was passed. I'm just wondering what the progress is to date on highway traffic cameras. Oh, and before I go on, I'm assuming that whatever information that my colleague to the left will has asked,
he'll get
and vice versa.
We'll certainly get provided as well. So last fall, we did pass legislation enabling cameras to be used to ticket people who kind of speed, because before that, a physical person had to be there to verify it, and so the legislation we passed no longer requires that. So we've been working on multiple regulations, I guess, for the Highway Traffic Act. The first are dealer regulations, which I think are done now. Yeah. And so that kind of modernizes how we work with dealers. And then the second, which, you know, this is very important to me, and, you know, we have been working on the regulations, which should be, you know, not too much longer. Part of the challenge is, you know, which, you know, we've been working on internally, is how do we propose regulations that facilitate anyone who wants to use speed cameras? So, for example, whether you're the City of Mount Pearl or the RNC or a private company, you know, whether or not private company was probably a bad example, but, you know, if a body wants to use speed cameras, for example, on school buses, the NLASD, right now we don't have a system, or it's not integrated into our system to be able to enable that. So, but we have passed the legislation, so we're fine-tuning the proposed regulations to, I guess, make sure that, you know, we have, for example, all the privacy considerations. I know we've been working with the privacy commissioner on that because, you know, especially with cameras taking a picture in a car, you know, there's a lot of privacy considerations around that. And because we don't have the software and the technical solution readily available, we're trying to build the regulations to ensure that we account for any privacy concerns of, you know, whatever solution will be in place to implement. I don't know if Gail or Sean, you want to add to that?
Sure. So I would just note that, again, the regulations are very close to being prepared, and once they're completed, they'll be published in the Gazette. And again, we have to ensure that they're written in such a way that if a result is obtained, that it's deemed by the court to be a true result for the purpose of enforcing a ticket or other charge.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, there's a reasonable expectation of privacy in certain settings. However, if I'm out in the car on the public road, that the expectation of privacy is significantly diminished. And I'm thinking here in terms of cameras, and this is probably not in your district, in your wheelhouse here, but the number of cars that are going around now with tinted front side and front windows. And certainly when it comes to, and basically they're designed, I would assume, to mask the identity of the driver, which I would assume that if you're a driver, I should be able to see your face, especially if I need to see your eyes. It's a safety issue as well. If I'm a pedestrian, I want to know if you're looking at me, you can see me. So I'm just curious about.
Well, actually, so that is our department as well, and it is illegal to have tinted windows from the driver, you know, in front. And so, like, it shouldn't be allowed. The law enforcement need to be able to see the driver. Gail, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, so what you're describing is exactly what we're trying to work through. And it depending upon the technology that's used, determines, what picture gets taken of the vehicle. There is technology out there that would take a picture of the license plate as well as whoever's in the vehicle, and then whoever the vendor is would be responsible then for cropping out any pictures of people and making sure that it's just on the license plate. And then you have other technology which can configure from a pixology perspective and just take the license plate. So those are types of things that we are working through.
Good. And then what about the use of drones, too, and technology as a police tool? And that's probably not within there. Is that something anticipated by this legislation as well?
We can certainly go back and check to see how that would apply. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Okay.
Yeah, Gail Boland. So the amendments that were made with the Highway Traffic Act spoke to basically two types of technology, whether it's mounted or mobile.
Okay.
So that's what we'd be considering.
Thank you. In this new digital age, online expense forms, so I'm thinking about MHAs. I've in my former life, I filled out a form, an online expense form, electronic signature, sent it off, done. Here it seems it's not only do I fill it out electronically, but I have to fill up a copy. I'll make a paper copy and do a wet signature. And I'm trying to think where the savings are in this, because it's got to be the most cumbersome, inefficient, archaic system I've ever seen. So to me, I came from a world where filled out the electronic form, sent it off, done, all straight in the way. For God's sake, can you make that more efficient and do a better job? Because it's got to cost more money than you're saving.
Thank you, I guess, for the question. I guess specifically MHA expenses, which I agree with you completely, is extremely onerous. And that's probably another thing maybe for Management Commission, or because I think there's a process element, process policy, and also a technology element there. But I guess we have a big, long list of services for residents. You know, there's hundreds of things on the list that need to be, you know, to have the process reviewed and approved and then and moved online. And so we kind of prioritize things based on, you know, the volume of users who are going to do them, the amount of, you know, internal efficiency. You know, some people, for example, like if you're applying for electrical permits out, you know, and you're working on a construction site, you know, you don't want to fill in a paper form and you don't have access to a printer and a fax. So there's a range of things that we look at in prioritizing. And I guess, you know, we'd be happy to work with the House of Assembly to add, you know, expense forms, which I agree with you. Any House of Assembly things, you know, we could certainly work with the House of Assembly and to add those to the list. I don't think that would be, you know, we have a lot of high volume. And I think about the 40 MHAs is inconvenient for us. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, there are higher, you know, bang for our bucks that the government could spend.
No, I understand. I'm just thinking in terms of such a simple fix, and since the only one who has access to my computer is going to be me, and even at home. That's another matter. I'll talk about that in a minute, maybe. Road deterioration and weigh scales. I was asked to ask this question in particular. What is the status on provincial weigh scales? Are they're only opened during the day. And the concern is that transport trucks carrying heavy loads can easily time their movements to avoid then being weighed through. So is there any plan to deal with that, or how is that being dealt with? I'm not necessarily sure that the deterioration, the ruts in the roads, are actually the cause of ATVs, because you look at the wheelbase, it's probably more cars that are doing the damage than trucks.
I'm going to direct that to, I guess, Gail or Sean.
Gail Boland. So with respect to our weigh stations, all of our highway enforcement officers, so we have 32 highway enforcement officers across the island and in Labrador. And all of our highway enforcement officers work shift work. To maximize the amount of time that they're at the weigh scales. And as well, too, we have we shift. So in areas where we might not have a high number of highway enforcement officers, our staff will not work the same hours all the time. So we try to keep everybody on their toes.
Thank you. And here's another one that's it's probably, I don't know if it's anywhere else in the province, but it certainly is growing here in St. John's, and that's the use of these bicycles being converted to motorized bicycles. I know where it's being done, as I found out accidentally, but still the fact is that they're not necessarily being, they're not regulated is my concern. So they seem to be growing. Certainly, they go a lot faster than a bicycle, and a lot faster. And I don't know how safe they are. So,
go ahead.
So, there's a few things there, I guess, and I'll also pass it over to Gail. But so we are completely revamping our ATV and snowmobile legislation, that kind of all-terrain vehicle. That we've done a complete review. You know, I've talked about that, you know, in question period and stuff as well. And so from a, I guess, safety perspective, as well as a, you know, just practical things, for example, side-by-sides are not considered in our current legislation whatsoever. So when, you know, I bring that legislation forward, I anticipate that to have an impact to kind of any street-worthy or non-street-worthy vehicle that one might see. Gail, I don't know if you wanted to add anything else about, I guess, homemade electric bikes. I guess that's what you're talking about.
No, they're gas-powered.
Gas-powered, okay.
They're gas-powered bikes, but they've been converted, bicycles that have been converted to this.
Right, okay.
Gail Boland. Yeah, so, I mean, we are, like the minister had said, we are considering various types of off-road vehicles, and through that process we will consider those sorts of situations as well. But we are also, you know, things are evolving every day, and sometimes, you know, it takes a little time to get caught up with all the changes and the new things and the technology and that sort of thing as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dean. Mr. Trimper. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Mr. Trimper.
Thank you. Just to go back to it, maybe you could, you were getting to finish off on the registries. Maybe you wanted, he was going to touch on it.
Yes.
Thanks, Sean Dutton. As the minister said, I mean, the commitment in the budget was to consider and look at alternatives for the registries. And again, we're looking at the practices in other jurisdictions. Alberta, in addition to the review they did previously on the motor registration, have initiated a procurement process around the registries for deeds and companies just in January. So we'll be looking at all of those types of examples and determining what's the best approach going forward. I guess the biggest challenge, as was mentioned, is the cost of the IT infrastructure and the capital costs around their inevitable need for replacement.
Thank you. Just to go back to our colleague there, just ask about cameras and stuff. I know that on vehicles, when they come into dealerships, they come in with a certain tint. So you're talking about being able to see on the side. There's a certain tint that they can only put on them, and any vehicles that are darkened out are done to, I'll just call it 0.5 because I don't know the measurement, but after you go above that, it's illegal to do it. So the police really is an enforcement that if they were going to do that, that's how they would enforce it, I'm going to say, on that part. And also on cameras, right now with the, and I'll just because I came from dealership, they have rear trucks, vehicles, I'm going to say, pickups have front and rear plates, and cars just have rear plates, right? So, and most times when people come in to buy a truck, as an example, so you're using the cameras, so you're looking at front and rear. When you come in to buy a truck, they say, don't put the plate on the front. Sometimes there's a bracket on it, sometimes there's not. So you put two plates on the back and put the second one underneath. So if you're looking at that as a camera thing, you may have to enforce that going through dealerships if you're looking at that. Mm. All right. So I'm just going to get on to under section 1.2.01. Right. Under employee benefits. I'll let you catch up if
you're
1.2.01, yep. Yeah, okay. Employee benefits went over budget last year by $78,400 was budgeted, but $127,000 was spent. Could you please provide some detail on that?
So the increase of $48,700 there was due to higher workers' compensation charges.
Okay, thank you. Could you please outline where this revenue comes from and what accounts for the variance in it?
Which one, sorry?
Under revenue and provincial, sorry. Could you please?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so the decrease in $100,600 is due to lower cost recovery revenue of salaries and administrative costs related to occupational health and safety. So we essentially bill back all of our occupational health and safety costs get incurred by Workplace NL. And so based on a percentage of actual expenditures, I guess we had fewer costs to recover. I don't know if Bonnie, you wanted to add anything to that?
No, we bill quarterly, and just for the costs that are incurred. Sometimes there might be a timing difference of when we receive the money, but all the billings do go out.
Okay, thank you. Under 1.2.03, administrative support, under purchase services, could you please detail what purchase services fall in this line item and what accounts for the variance?
1.2.03.
Yep.
Sorry. Okay.
Purchase services.
Purchased services. Okay. So part of that, there's the cost of the death registration project that was carried forward. So there's a two-year project cost of $265,000 plus $105,000 carried forward because there was a delay in the start of that project, of the death registration project we talked about.
Okay. And under property furnishing and equipment, yep, there's an unbudgeted expenditure here of $97,000. Can you explain that?
So this is the Queen's Printer bought a new printer, essentially, and so that's the cost, $97,000 cost for the new printer.
All right. Under revenue federal, I note that last year it was $320,000 was anticipated but not received, and why not?
So there's a decrease in $290,000 due to revenue from the federal government that was received and deferred over 2 years. And this is then offset by $30,000 in additional federal funding for the death registration project. Yes, okay.
Okay. All right, so under this section, we're going, so that's it for me on 1.2. That's where it ends, right? That's as far as we're going in this section? Yeah, so I'm good there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean?
Do I get my colleagues' minutes too? No. Thought I'd ask.
No.
with is it possible right now to have how work is proceeding on the new accessibility legislation?
Yep. Just a second. So we have a committee, advisory group. Let's get my notes here on that, just to make sure I give you the best. Yes, so we are working on changes to the Building Accessibility Act. So there, the Building Accessory Advisory Board has been working on recommendations for me. I have not yet seen those recommendations, but I guess they've undertaken a review, and I don't know if, I guess, anyone wants to add anything. Sean?
Sean Dutton. Yes, the Buildings Accessibility Advisory Board, they were tasked with the carrying out consultations with key stakeholders and developing recommendations. So we're told that they're very close to having that process completed, so we should be receiving that in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you. Can we have an update on the plan to move from a plate to vehicle to a plate to owner system?
So my understanding is part of the challenge with that is our current system, and so I don't know, Gail, you want to, so I guess part, you know, when we look at whether or not to, you know, implement a joint solution for the motor registration division, I think that's one of the key considerations. I don't know if, Gail, you want to expand on that?
Yeah, sure. Gail Boland. Yes, Minister Sudley is correct in that our current mainframe system does not support that ability. So part of that, we have gone and looked with our Atlantic partners and actually visited New Brunswick, and we looked at their system, trying to determine what's the best fit for us. And recently the OCIO went to market on a request for information related to a number of older mainframe systems, which would have included MRD mainframe systems. So for right now, we don't have the ability because it's a systems issue.
Is it possible to track when someone decides to cancel their insurance? While they're, you know, because there are cars that are going, drivers going around without insurance, so obviously they have to present it when they license, but there's nothing that they canceled after. Is there any way in which the insurance company can say they have not, they've canceled the insurance, and then that's flagged?
That is a technology solution that is almost ready to go, where insurance companies will be able to tell us you know, whenever someone cancels their insurance, and that will go directly to the motor registration division.
That's an excellent news. The review, I think you talked about this in terms of motorized bicycles that we touched on. The review of the motorized snow vehicles and all-terrain vehicles act is completed and currently with the cabinet. Can we have an update on the progress of updating the legislation? Anything we talked about in terms of motor vehicles, but are there any specifics about updating the legislation? And can we expect to see it this year coming?
Well, it's in my mandate letter. It is a priority. We've done a complete review of all the legislation. Just give an example, in terms of mandatory helmets, we're the only province in Canada that does not have mandatory helmets for ATV use. So, you know, it is a priority. I can't tell you, you know, it's up to the government house leader and the internal processes, but it is in my mandate letter, and it is important for the government.
Thank you very much. And the death notices, the death notification project, so this is meant to streamline the process, I take it, right?
Correct.
And I do remember my aunt died. They had stopped paying her CPP, but they still want to prove she was dead, which I found, you know, I think you already had that already. So that's designed to eliminate. It's more expensive and complicated to get out of this world than to come into it. Okay. On 1.1.01... salaries. What was the reason for last year's savings of $50,000?
Sorry, 1.1.0.
Minister's office.
So, there. 1.1.01. The minister, if you recall, Minister Osborne was Minister of Digital Government and Service and Ill for a while, as well as his EA. So I guess additional ministerial costs were not incurred during that time.
I'm sorry, say that again? But they weren't incurred at that time?
Well, because he was Minister of Finance, and yeah. So you only get one. So essentially, we didn't incur costs while he was minister.
Okay.
So he saved us money by...
I'll have to compliment him on that,
yeah.
Then.
And that goes the same for his EA. That was another cost we didn't incur.
Thank you. 1.2.01, salaries. The reduction of this year's estimates by $23,000. I'm assuming that to do with the loss of a pay period and maybe step mitigated by step increases?
Correct. Yeah, the 2% the pay increase that we have to pay out.
Thank you. 1.2.02 French language services. The reason for the $5,000 is not much overspending last year, just more. What would the reason be for that? Just a normal variance?
Line item was that, sorry?
It's 1.2.02. I think there's a total of $5,000. No, more than that. And salaries.
Oh, salaries, okay.
And then it's dropped back down.
So that's, you know, the elimination of the 27th pay period again, and then the wage increase.
Okay. Under 1.2.03, I think we said, yeah, this is all related, and this whole section is then related to the death notification project.
Correct. Yeah.
Correct. And I think... Mr. Chair, that might be it. Just make absolutely sure I've got that covered. And with regards to one comment you made, Minister, at the, I think you said there's 98% of vehicle registration and 92%.
Driver's license.
Renewals. Licenses. Just two quick comments. I know because we do the online registration for both my mother and mother-in-law, who... So I would say that there are an awful lot of families who are doing that, and there are people then who don't have that the luxury of having sometimes family nearby. So it's just, and they're totally at sea with doing it. The only other comment I will make is in terms of the backlog. I know that you're working, that your department and motor vehicle is working diligently to eliminate it, but I know that a couple of months ago I got the people who were trying to get through, they weren't getting calls returned. Most recently I had to respond to two constituents, who one of whom I'm married to, but at the same time trying to be nimble with it, and plus the mechanic at our garage said the earliest he could get the date to transfer the truck to his father was July 6th. So I just want you aware of that. I'm certainly, and from what I understand, the people who we eventually spoke to are most helpful. And but it's a bit of a wait for some people, especially if something's come up suddenly that they need to move on it quickly.
So, you know, the department over two high seasons essentially has had to shift completely how they operate, and it's still like a learning process. Last summer, we put in a new kind of contact center technology that had a much more sophisticated phone capabilities. And so then during low season, when we didn't, you know, we were allowing people to leave a voicemail, for example. But then, you know, up until a few weeks ago, we were getting 1,800 voicemails a day, which is not feasible, you know, and not a good use of our time to listen to all those voicemails and then call people back, because that's, you're spending twice the amount of time helping someone as you know, just talking to them once. So it is kind of a learning process, and we are making changes to, you know, get to as many people as we can as quickly as we can. And we're also doing a lot of work to improve the website, you know, because people come there as their first point of entry to figure out, what do I do, what do I need, how can I do something? And so making sure that that information is really clear and that people know the channels available to them to get to process a transaction, because there's a lot of things that you can do by sending us an email. You don't need to necessarily wait, you know, schedule an appointment. So we're trying to make the website as clear as possible so that people can have the easiest channel available to them to get what they need done.
Okay, thank you so much. Now, Mr. Trimper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's really good to be here today. This is of the different departments I had opportunity to serve with. This was definitely one of my favorite, and it's just good to be back with Service NL, it was at the time. So anyway, I'm enjoying it. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to speak and interact with this good group of people. Just an opening comment, I'm just hoping that the social club atmosphere that still persists there in that department, like it, to me, I don't know if it's a, it's still on the go, but it was certainly very unique in what I saw in government. So I hope so for your sakes. I had a couple questions about Francophone Affairs and French Services. I'm trying to recall what the contribution was that we were receiving from the federal government years ago. Maybe the comptroller or minister, or you may know, but we were lobbying for additional funding. I'm not sure if the $350,000 represents an increase or that's the same number we've had for many years.
I'll throw that over to Sean or Bonnie.
Yep. Sean Dutton, no, it's the same. There was no increase. So it was renewed for a five-year period, but at the same level as the previous five-year agreement.
Yeah, that's too bad, because I can recall that it was tied to, I think, an archaic understanding of our situation, and that's too bad. But at least it's still there. We appreciate that. I just wondered if the minister could update on what additional services could be offered en français that you may be working on, the collective department.
So I guess we, part of when we're looking at adding a new service, we also look at, you know, can we add a service in French? So recently, this wasn't necessarily related to our department in terms of services, but I guess as my role as Minister of Francophone Affairs, if you notice, the last emergency alert that went out on your phones was in English and French. So we, I believe, have a commitment internally that whenever there's enough notice, whenever, you know, we can have a translation done quickly enough, that the alerts will go out in English and French, the emergency alerts. This year we recently added, processing for birth certificates in French. You know, I guess we do have to recognize the volume of people who do transactions in French is lower. So we have to prioritize that with, I guess, driving value for taxpayers.
right on, but certainly in my experience, there was no more appreciative group than the Francophone speakers in this province. So,
And I did meet with Minister Jolie federally just a few weeks ago, and I did essentially ask her for more funding to support French online services, and she indicated that that was mentioned to her for many ministers across the country, and that she'd be looking at that in the future. There's no funding currently for that, but potentially in the future.
I asked her that 5 years ago, so keep going. Yeah. Way to go. Jumping around a little bit, electrical inspections. I appreciate what the department does, your team, this challenge of in Labrador of having an electrical inspector for those companies that are building something that don't have somebody who's got a red seal and having to bring that in. Have we ever thought about, engaging, contracting, perhaps a company that does have a red seal who could inspect? I know they're working with competition, but would there be, I suspect there'd be quite a bit of efficiency there instead of flying someone in to do a few jobs as they get stacked up.
I'm going to pass that over to Gail or Sean, maybe.
Gail Boland, unfortunately, no, I'm not aware that has been considered, although I'm really new to the department. I'm not sure if Sean would have any recollection either. No.
Well, I'll toss that out there just as a suggestion. We tend to, it comes without warning. You suddenly get two or three job sites that require an inspector, and we're reaching out through the MHA offices into your EAs to say, can we get somebody up to quickly look at a bunch of sites with that short building season? Could that be possibly done, I wonder, to have someone just appointed locally to help with that? Helmets. This is going to be such a challenge. I'm a full supporter. I understand. I have seen. I lost a colleague that worked in government with me, 4 years ago. Again, not wearing a helmet. And I get it. I get it loud and clear. Culturally, we are going to have a great challenge in Labrador. And however I can help, I'm available. I'm not sure what else to say other than this is going to be challenging. Yeah. Could I get an update on taxi insurance and how it's going with trying to see what we can do to reduce the rates? Are we still seeing? I haven't heard of a threatened strike in some time. And as George Murphy's passing this week, I felt I needed to ask about taxi rates.
So I think as a result of COVID-19, people are driving less, unfortunately, but we have not seen applications to the Public Utilities Board for rate increases. Obviously, the Public Utilities Board regulates insurance, or they work with the insurers on price, and so we have not seen any recent price increase applications. I don't know if, Scott, you wanted to add to that or from the taxi perspective?
Scott Jones. Go ahead, Sean.
Sean Dutton. Yes, so a number of reforms were implemented in 2019, and most of those announced at the conclusion of the review have been implemented. So that had included a reduction by half in the commission rate for taxis and limousines with the facility association. Facility was also to establish risk-sharing pools to help for high-risk drivers, and that's been implemented, and you can find the risk-sharing pools information online on the Facility Association website. Many of the other changes would also have potential benefit to all motorists, including taxi drivers. Again, while it hasn't seen initial results around changes in rates. There hasn't been an increase, and we have heard from the insurance industry that I guess they continue to have concerns about the affordability of the product, and there's some further consolidation happening in the insurance industry, which is probably not conducive to additional competition.
Well, congratulations. I remember that was a big list. It just seemed to grow every time two or three boxes got checked, so well done. I'm going to stop there, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I have more questions, but it was in the
next section.
Yeah, next section, yeah.
Okay, but we're okay. This section, okay. Clerk?
1.1.01 to 1.2.03, Executive and Support Services.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.203 inclusive carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Against? All right. Now, clerk?
2.1.01 to 2.2.03 inclusive, Regulatory Affairs.
And Mr. O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a couple of questions and previous one, and just to touch on them. A road test backlog, what is it by region? Can you be able to tell us that?
Road test backlog?
Yeah.
There's actually, road tests are pretty good. I'm just trying to, the longest backlog at the moment obviously is in Mount Pearl. The next road test appointment is July 8th, as of yesterday. But in many areas of the province, you can get a road test, you know, within a day or two. We could certainly provide a more detailed breakdown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. If Harbor Grace has less of a backlog, any thought of bringing an examiner in for a couple of days or a week to take care of that backlog, or is that something that
it's
can
about
happen?
About 2 weeks in Harbor Grace right now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. What would it cost to add a Saturday in appointment to help eliminate the backlog?
Well, we're looking at, you know, do we have extended hours and that sort of stuff. So we are looking at ways to reduce the backlog, especially during high season, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I know due to COVID, obviously, I mean, it's backlog. So nice to get it out of your way and get back to square, I'd say. That'd be my.
Yeah.
And the plate to owner, obviously, you know, something I know that the system can't do it right now, but I think it may be something that government at some point in time are going to have to invest and do that, because I think it's a great move. Just coming from the car dealership and just anyone individual. I know that a lot of times people sell their car and don't sign the registration. If you take that and send it in, then you're off the hook. But sometimes people forget to do that, and somebody buys a car, don't insure it, takes it and drives. And that's where you get the people with $30,000 and $40,000 worth of fines. I'm sure that, you know, you run into that. So, and again, it's good to hear the insurance, because the only way you could follow a vehicle for insurance purposes, if you had a contract on it and you owed money, and the bank would notify, they would notify the bank, and the bank would notify that person that you got to get insurance on your car because they got a contract on it if it was written off. So it's good to see that's something that you're implementing. Is that, how's that going to work?
Sean Dutton. So we're working with the Insurance Bureau of Canada. I mean, I guess there was a system years ago that was all paper-based, and you can imagine that that was very unwieldy and was discontinued, so it wasn't particularly effective. So we need an electronic solution. I guess one of the issues we'll have to resolve is that, you know, Insurance Bureau and insurance companies can provide the information. We have to ensure that those people in facility association that were also notified, because people may switch from, you know, canceling their insurance and then they have to go into facility, or they get out of facility and go into insurance. So so it's a bit complicated amongst the parties to make sure that we get the full picture of whether in fact the driver is insured or not.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's important, because, you know, you're getting people with $30,000 and $40,000 worth of fines that you're never going to recover. They buy these cars for $500,000, put them on the road, don't insure them, and away they go until they get caught again, and then they rack up another, and they're never going to pay them. So somewhere along the way, we have to figure that out. No, it's not easy, because it's certainly complicated. All right, moving on to 2.1.01, yep. Under salaries. Last year, salaries came in under budget by $69,200. Can you please outline why?
So that's a result of vacancies during the year in the department.
Okay. And under revenue provincial, can you please explain where this revenue comes from?
So the increase in $200 is due to higher volume of residential tenancy hearing applications we've received.
Okay. What is current caseload for residential tenancies, and how has COVID impacted that?
I'll pass it over to Scott in a minute, but during COVID-19, we changed how we did the appointments. So, you used to gather in a small room. And I understand, the social distancing couldn't be maintained and everything. So we had to shift to kind of virtual appointments and or bigger spaces. And I know one of the challenges we've had is that we have three residential tenancy adjudicators. And that's quite an important and difficult job, adjudicating those hearings. But we've been down one out of three. For a while now, and so Scott, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Scott Jones, so just to give you some of the statistics, and it's like the minister mentioned, we've moved from being in the hearings being held inside a confined space to having virtual hearings during the COVID period, so that we could adhere to public health measures. But also, as the minister mentioned, we have three residential tenancy adjudicators that's located at various locations across the province. We have had a long-term vacancy in one, so there has been a bit of a challenge on scheduling hearings in that one. But good news on that is that just prior to coming in this morning, we had approval to make an offer on the refilling that vacancy, so we should be able to do any kind of backlog from it will be, as opposed to two people are dealing with it, it'll be three people are dealing with it. So that's good news there. On the statistics in particular, in 2018 there was just over 1,000 dispute hearings, in 2019 there was just over 1,200. Last year, of course, the past couple of years, because of the COVID, that's reduced. So during 2020, it was down to just under 800, and we have just over 300 so far this year. And of those 300, there are 170 that are scheduled and will be heard over the coming weeks and months.
Okay, thank you. Under 2.1.02, under salaries, last year salaries came in under budget by $215,000. Can you explain or outline why?
Yep, so we had some vacancies, so two examiners, one investigator, and one policy analyst. So those vacancies meant we were under on our salaries line item.
Will they be filled this year, those vacancies? Is that something that you're...
Scott, I don't know if you want to talk about it.
Scott Jones. Yes, actually, we're in the process now of revising the organizational structure to enhance service to the licensees, applicants, and consumers, including moving from a completely paper-based system into an online system that will allow applicants and licensees to submit their renewals electronically. As also as part of the revised structure, we're taking a renewed focus on the examination investigation side, and we're in the final stages of updating the position descriptions to reflect the recent restructure. And but in the meantime, we have filled May 26th. We had a new examiner start. We have got a policy individual started in April as well. So some of these positions are being filled as we work through the revised structure at the same time.
Just as someone that gets hired, is there a certain, what criteria would you need to be hired to do those kind of, exams or other licensing, whatever you got to do there? Like, is that some special course you got to have, or what is it? What's expected?
Scott Jones. So each position has its position description, and the description is done through analysis with the Treasury Board Secretariat through the various classifications, and based on what is needed to perform the job itself. So there's varying qualifications and educational qualifications and experience qualifications to be able to meet the minimum criteria for the job.
Okay, thank you. Under purchase services, could you please provide some information about the types of services which were purchased and included in that line item?
Sure. So the difference, I guess, between the 2,900 is, you know, as we move more things online, we incur different types of fees for paying for things online, as well as right now our vendor, Moneris, they process payments. The Moneris fees have gone up, you know, particularly because of all the online services that we're driving. So, you know, Ida Finance, I believe, has a contract with Moneris, but we are kind of all working together to see if we can change the contract or if there's other ways to enable online payments to save more money. Because unfortunately, you know, we ended up spending more in Moneris fees this year to process all those online payments.
Okay. And under section 2.1.04, I think I'm allowed to go that far, am I? Is that, yeah, just to be sure. I think it is, yeah. Purchase services. Could you please provide some information about here about the types of services which fall into this line item? And could you please provide an explanation of the variance in last year's budget and revised numbers?
Sure. So purchase services, you know, for the increase is due to scheduled increase with Unisys. And Unisys is a third-party provider for personal property security registries. As well as higher Moneris fees because of our online volumes. And then, you know, in terms of the money that we spent this past year, it is higher, $43,000 higher because of the additional Moneris fees because of all the online transactions. So, again, we are looking at, you know, can we change our Moneris contract? Is there another vendor we can look at? Because, you know, we just can't be beholden to their fee increases.
Yeah.
Okay. We're now going to take a five-minute break.
Okay.
Mr. Dean?
Some of the questions have already been answered. Just to make sure, the case, we've got three residential tenancies adjudicators at this point in time, and they've got, just to confirm, they've got this year, they've got a caseload of 300 between them. Would that be correct?
So we have three positions. Two are filled. One has not been filled for a while, but Scott mentioned we have approval to make an offer to a third. And so, Scott, if you want to confirm the numbers for this year?
Scott Jones, yeah, the 300, that's in aggregate. That's not each. That's not for each.
No, no, I understood that. That's 300 in aggregate then, so roughly it'd be about 100, if you get the third person, 100 per adjudicator, correct?
Yes, on average. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Had something else there, but that's okay. Under 2.1.03, pension benefit standards. Have the changes under Bill 54, 2020, to allow people to withdraw funds from their locked-in retirement funds been implemented, and can the minister provide the number of plan holders who withdrew funds from their locked-in retirement funds?
So we did implement the changes. They, as of, I believe, March 1st, I think was the effective date. Yep. And so I believe the reporting requirements are every 6 months. So they don't yet have to inform us, you know, but at 6 months after that, we will, they do have to tell us how many of their members withdrew pensions. And I guess as I've received a lot of communications from people, I guess, during that process, and we're not aware of anyone who wanted to take money out who wasn't able to.
Okay, thank you. And under section 2.1.03, salaries, what's the reason for the $21,000 overspending last year? I'm assuming it's probably COVID and 27th pay period and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's the 27th pay period and additional funding for the 2% increase.
Under 2.1.04, commercial registrations. And the reason for the 77,000 savings last year, same thing?
For salaries?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. And then for the actuals, so part of this includes the Credit Union Deposit Guarantee Corporation and their salaries. And so we did have some vacancies during the year, and the Credit Union Deposit Guarantee Corporation essentially pays us back for their salary costs, but they show up in the estimates here.
Okay.
And so they had sent us Q4 salary costs.
Thank you. I just want to go back to something you talked about, the fees paid to Unisys and Moneris. See, I'm old enough to remember when instant tellers first came in, there was no fee for using them. I think it was a cheap way. It's like the drugs to hook you into it, and you can't back off. Now they charge fees, and I would say they now there are fees charged if you have a balance that you don't use. If you make it's like it's sucking the life out of it. Here's my question. I'm assuming the cost-benefit analysis, this is cheaper, so to the department, are there savings, or are they being eaten up in fees?
I don't know that we have the detailed breakdown, but I guess the Moneris fees, you know, to your point, absolutely, the fees that we pay, the extra fees to have someone do something online is certainly more efficient than, having someone sit down and spend 15 minutes doing a transaction with you in person. Absolutely. I guess my point is we should be looking at reducing that cost, no matter what it is. And so now that we have essentially over the last 2 years changed the mix of how we process financial transactions with residents, you know, 2 years ago it would look very different than what it looks today in terms of processing online. I just want to make sure that the contract that we have for that, now it's not with our department, it's with finance, but I've been, I guess, lobbying to make sure that that contract is fit for purpose for our current mix of how we work with residents and how we process transactions and make sure that we can't be getting more value for money there.
Okay. Under 2.2.01, Vital Statistics Registry, salaries. What was the reason for the $68,000 increase in salaries last year, and why is the estimate for this year reduced by $130,000?
So 2.2.01, Vital Statistics salaries, the increase, the 27th pay period, and then so we had lower salary steps for incumbents, and then that was offset by retirement. That's kind of the upcoming. So we anticipated retirement. And then this past year, we paid out for two retirements offset by replacement incumbents at lower steps and then one vacancy.
So you paid out two retirements?
Yes.
And that was offset by?
One vacancy, and then we rehired people, obviously, at a lower step.
Thank you. Purchase services under that same section. Why was the estimate for this year decreased by $78,000? Is that to do with the death notification project winding down?
Yes. Yep. So the decrease of $78,000 is the death registration project, including $80,000 for current costs related to that project.
Thank you. Under 2.2.03, printing and micrographic services, the same salaries, the $45,000 savings last year. What's the same, anything different from the 27th pay period and the step progressions?
Just a second. So the upcoming amount we need is the same, elimination of the 27th pay period plus the wage increase. This past year, the reduction was related to two vacancies in the division offset by then those salary increases.
Are the vacancies to do with attrition then? I've noticed throughout just about every estimates committee, there are significant, when I look at them and told, there's a significant number of vacancies. And I'm just wondering the impact on the department's ability to do the work. We talked about motor vehicle registration, that's front line. Holy Heart, I used this last night. Holy Heart had three secretaries when I first went there. A couple of years after it went two, but it did have an impact. Now, I guess you might say, well, we're more efficient, but it did mean that when it came to copying exams that the secretaries would have done, that now fell to the teacher. So the workload was increased. It did make, and meant that other things weren't being done as well. So I'm just wondering here with the vacancies, and is it because if the numbers are in the staffing are lower, is it making it difficult for staff to turn their attention to getting the hires that they need, the vacancies filled? That's where I'm looking at it. If indeed we're looking at attrition and not replacing, it's got to have an effect on the ability to fill the vacancies, because that means you've got to turn your attention away from other work to try and get these filled.
Shauna, if you wanted to.
Sure. Shaun Dutton, and we talked at some length about this last evening. I think where the explanation is around less spending than anticipated due to vacancies, I mean, that's typically because there's a process undertaken for recruitment. There's a commitment to follow a merit-based process. And in some areas, I guess printing and micrographics as an example, we wouldn't just hire anyone off the street to operate the printing equipment. They'd have to have, training and expertise. So they don't necessarily, come out of the woodwork right off the bat. So they will require a posting of the ad, a screening, a competition. If it's a unionized position, there also has to be a secondary evaluation that takes seniority into account. Mm-hmm. So there is a process that we have to go through to ensure that the merit-based process is followed. And there can be other delays for other reasons, difficulty scheduling interviews. Somebody is sick that day. Someone grieves the review that screened them out, or the result of the board. So there's a number of factors that can weigh into that over the course of the year. And the mitigation is to hire temporary assistants where you can. And we do have a lot more of, administrative type positions in the department, particularly in areas like commercial registrations and motor registration, where you'd have a lot of people working as a word processing equipment operator or a clerk, that there might be a greater abundance of people available with those types of skills. And so a lot of times we'll look at hiring a temporary person without a competition on a short-term basis, while you concurrently run a competition to fill the job on a long-term basis. And you also have people departing sometimes due to illness. You're not certain when they're coming back, so that may stall your ability to hire a replacement until you have some certainty on when that person might be able to return to the workplace.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just under the, we know how low the issue with the price of lumber, is there any department monitoring that?
Scott, do you want to, I didn't know if you had your hand. So the question, I guess, was around price of lumber. So, in our department, we are responsible for, when you say price gouging, the wording in the legislation is really around unconscionable acts is the wording. And there's no specific prescription around, if the cost of goods is too high. Pragmatically, in terms of prosecuting and actioning price gouging or pricing unconscionably, is two things being sold and one is being sold at an exorbitant cost. I don't know, Scott, if you want to add anything to that, in terms of just generally the price of lumber being high, that based on the current legislation, that would not trigger, any action by our department, but we do receive complaints, it's complaint driven. So, we do welcome complaints around that.
Scott Jones, like the minister said, the legislation wouldn't specifically target a product like monitoring lumber. It's about business practices and as the minister mentioned, unconscionable business practices. So this is an industry-driven, the lumber in particular is industry-driven, so it's the Business Trade Practices Act tends to focus on anomalies, price anomalies or exceptions that would indicate excessive pricing, and then of course it would be subject to the individual, the consumer, to make a complaint to the Consumer Affairs Division, and then the Consumer Affairs would investigate the complaint to determine if it's excessive pricing. And part of the criteria that would be looked at is as I mentioned, industry pricing, also pricing within in a particular region may differ, so that's taken into consideration as well. And just to give you an idea, so in 2021, during COVID, so the Consumer Affairs Office received 774 complaints. Only 45 were related to the general pricing, and then even fewer, 15, were in relation to what would be considered price gouging. And there was no evidence of price gouging in those cases.
All right, thank you. The shorter price of lumber, we all think they're unconscionable, but no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Charitable lotteries, I believe they were suspended for a while during Level 5. Have they resumed, and does the minister have a sense of how many non-profits were impacted?
So I guess we are issuing lottery licenses in accordance with the public health guidelines. If you look at the public health, there's, you know, worksheets, I believe, for, you know, how do you do bingos safely and all that kind of stuff. So our very small lotteries team, they work with public health and with, you know, charitable organizations to ensure that, you know, we issue lottery permits in accordance, you know, in making sure that organizations are following public health guidelines. I'm not sure off the top of my head how many organizations, I guess, were impacted during COVID, or Scott, I don't know if you know any of them.
Scott Jones. We don't have the number. I don't have the numbers with me right now but I mean, every organization was impacted at a varying degree because of our inability to or not to be able to issue licenses due to the public health guidelines type thing right in COVID. But we have, as Minister said, we have been working closely with public health as we brought the licensing back to be it so that nonprofit organizations can facilitate their events.
I guess that we've been in step with the public health guidelines, so I'm not aware of any time where our lottery were more stringent. You know, so when people couldn't gather, obviously you can't gather and have a fundraiser. You know, and the public health guidelines have been, specifically around bingo, for example. And so, you know, when they're not allowed, we would not issue a lottery license to allow in-person bingo. So we've kind of, they've been the keeper of the rules, and then we follow with what we allow, essentially, in terms of lottery.
Okay, thank you. Online lotteries, like people on Facebook that are running a lottery, sometimes there are individuals not organized. Is that allowed and regulated?
No. Well, yeah. Well, we regulate lotteries.
Yeah.
There's very complex, I guess, rules in terms of what is and isn't allowed. If someone just has a contest on Facebook, like, well, I guess we regulate charitable lotteries specifically. You know, other lotteries like Atlantic Lotto Corporation and for-profit, that would be through the Minister of Finance. And we do allow certain, you know, for example, Easter Seals, they, you know, have a website where you can buy tickets for their home lottery. You know, we work with them to follow the rules. There are certain things, for example, you can't do online, like selection of a winner. That has to be kind of a paper process at the moment. But something on Facebook that, is probably not allowed.
Thank you. Just go back to 2.2.01 under Revenue Federal. Could you please outline under what agreement or program this federal revenue comes from, and could you explain or provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue last year?
Sure. So, this past year, so we had a decrease. So we did some right-sizing of the budget, also included a one-time increase for the death registration project. So the federal government paid for that project. And then for the upcoming year, the decrease reflects $80,000 of deferred revenue that was received and receded in 2019-20, offset by an additional $27,400 in federal revenue received for the provision of information around births and deaths.
And the same thing under revenue provincial. Could you provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue there as well?
No, so that's lower than anticipated revenues related to secure shipment of birth certificates to individuals. So that we do that as a, on a cost recovery basis. So if someone orders a birth certificate to be rushed, we charge them whatever that costs us. And we had fewer, so we don't make money on that, but we had fewer requests for that. So we, you know, the revenue line would come in there.
Okay. Is account of service for things like marriage licensing, birth and death certificates reopened now?
Most of that is done online. There's nothing like that closed at the moment, you know, for COVID or anything.
Because we're aware of, during a period of time, counter services closed, but a couple was looking for a marriage license. We're able to visit a marriage commissioner's in their homes and explain that decision. I would assume that the counter service was appropriate with plexiglass and cleaning. Would it be safer to visit? Would it be safer than visiting a person's home to get a...
Scott, if you
want to
answer.
Scott Jones. So marriage license can be obtained through the Voter Statistics Office, but it also, we issue licenses that allow private individuals, marriage certificate issuers. And so that's where that the choice would have been by this particular, I assume, the choice by this particular couple that you may be referring to, they chose to go to this private as opposed to going through the vital statistics approach, which is you submit online, but we make it available. We would then, if you're in the St. John's Mount Pearl area, then we can set an appointment for you to come in and pick up your license. If you're outside it, then we facilitate a way to get that license to you.
Okay. Under 2.2.02 Queens Printer, under revenue, provincial, could you please provide an explanation for less than anticipated revenue this year?
Yep. So the decrease in $61,000 between our budgeted and projected is a reduction of revenues because more people, you know, are doing things online. We've seen university libraries, you know, around the country who used to buy copies of our legislation. They're not buying as many copies of our legislation anymore, and they're buying fewer books that we are printing.
That's it for me on this this section.
Thank you.
Section as well, Chair.
Okay. Clerk.
2.1.01 to 2.2.03 inclusive, regulatory affairs.
Okay. Shall 2.1.01 to 2.2.03 inclusive carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive, digital government and services.
Mr. O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under this division, under salaries, 3.1.01. Could you provide a breakdown number of employees in this division by region?
Sure. I don't know if Bonnie has that.
Bonnie Steele. Avalon region has 41 staff. 39 are permanent, 2 temporaries. We have 41 positions filled at this time. Eastern region has a total of 18 staff. Permanent 14, 1 seasonal, 2 temporary. We have Central has a total of 27 staff, 25 permanent, seasonal is 1, opening doors is 1. Western has a total of 27 staff with 24 of those permanent, 3 temporary. And Labrador has a total of 6 staff, which has 5 permanent positions and 1 temporary.
All right, thank you. Under salaries, there's a substantial savings in this line item from 2021. $439,100 was saved in salaries. Can you explain that?
So that reflects four highway enforcement officers, the manager of traffic safety, and a few other short-term vacancies offset by 3 retirement payouts and then salary increases.
Okay. Under purchase services, could you please provide a breakdown of the services purchased and the amount spent on each? Additionally, why did this line item go over budget by $309,700?
So it went up because of Moneris costs, you know, because of higher volume of debit and credit transactions, you know, in the motor registration offices. I don't know if, Bonnie, if you have a list of the a breakdown of all those. Sorry, I have some here. So that includes office rental costs, printing of forms, inspector books, copier charges, interpreting services, shredding services, storage costs, scale calibrations and equipment repairs, costs related to the photo driver licensing system, and then we also provided $5,000 to Safety NL for motorcycle safety training.
All right, thank you so much. Under grants and subsidies, could you provide a breakdown of how and where these grants are awarded?
Of course. This is the only grant, I think, within our department, but we give a $10,000 grant for Safety NL for a LIDS for Kids program. We also pay Canadian Vehicle Safety Alliance fees, Canadian Council of Motor Transport Administrators fees, International Registration Plan membership fees, and American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrator fees.
All right. Thank you. Under revenue federal, could you please outline under what agreement or program does federal revenue come from?
So we received federal revenue for our insurance validation project, and that's what we talked about in terms of insurance companies notifying us when someone has canceled their insurance, and that'll notify Motor Registration Division. So that's kind of a new technology solution that's almost ready.
Good. Under revenue provincial, could you please provide an explanation for less than anticipated revenue from last year?
Yep. So the decrease in $16,600 reflects fewer requests for expedited driver's license delivery services. So if I had to guess, people are traveling less often and don't realize they need to renew their driver's license and don't need expedited services of the driver's license.
Also, now we probably touched on this a little bit as we go along, but provide an update on the counter service and how service delivery has been impacted by COVID, and is there a backlog in any of the service? I know we touched on some of them, but just in general, I guess.
So for COVID, obviously, it was hugely impacted. I've already talked about a lot of that, but so we also had to reduce the number of counter spaces that we had, you know, for social distancing and all that. So I think it was only recently we were back up to 10 counter spaces in Mount Pearl being open. Some of our more rural areas, you know, would not have seen any negative impact and still aren't. You know, of 7 of our 11 government services offices, you can get an appointment within that week for counter service. So it's just kind of in the Mount Pearl and Corner Brook and our bigger locations that we do, unfortunately now during high season, have a bit more of a delay. But again, you know, I think some of that is just because we're new to essentially running a contact center, whereas before it was all appointment driven. So, you know, we're using technology, we have the data, we're trying to make incremental changes to test to see, you know, how we can be more efficient, and it's kind of a culture change really within the department. And we are also kind of as a pilot project to get ready for next summer, we are hoping to pilot some new technologies, for example, making email more efficient, you know, because we get a lot of emails to the MRD email account. So we're looking at, you know, are there any email ticketing tools we can use to make that more efficient for staff rather than, you know, managing it in Outlook, for example. So we are, you know, it is a priority for me personally to try and, using my former life background of doing this all the time, to try and make that experience, I guess, really, it's kind of managing a contact center, which we are trying to improve. We're working on it.
Yeah. So the counter service I'm going to use Mount Pearl because that's the busiest one, obviously. Yep. Is it fully open now? Like, is it fully back to all stalls being open that you can go in and
it is, service? Okay. It's fully open. Right. I think in the last week it's been fully open.
Okay. Yeah. Just, and I know that they go by appointment, you're saying, right?
Correct.
So when you go in, I know that you was open line, but I know I heard one guy on open line saying he went in. I hate you, it was an open line, but he went in and he had one vehicle to register. And when he decided to go, he had two. So they wouldn't register the second one for him. And I'm sure you probably get that. But that could be just a person that they're dealing with that day, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm sure that with making an appointment, if they got two or three, that I think that they could take care of it, you know. That's just something that I heard. And don't know if it actually happened. Yeah. But
I mean, personally, I would expect that, yes. You know, you wouldn't send someone away to make another appointment to come back for a second thing. Gail, I don't know if you wanted to speak to that.
Gail Boland, yes, absolutely. We accommodate, and you know, we even have people who show up without an appointment or who have traveled a long distance,
yes. And
we accommodate to the best of our ability, absolutely. Mount Pearl alone, we have 245 appointments a day.
I would think so too, but you know, when you hear that, this is a one-off, and I'm sure that, you know, I heard it and I said I just throw it out there.
Of course.
All right, under section 3.2.01, under support services.
Yep.
Salaries, there's a substantial salary overage of $165,500 in this line item for 2021. Can you explain that?
So there was a retirement payout and then salary increases as well, offset by vacancies.
Thank you. Under purchase services, could you explain or please outline what services are purchased and please explain what accounts for the variance from across the line item?
Yeah. So in terms of purchase services, so this includes, you know, printing, advertising, vehicle rentals, equipment rentals, and general purchase services for the division. And so the decrease, I guess, for this past year, so we had lower charges for secure cash services and copier charges, and then the amount that we're asking for, there's a decrease there because of a reduction for secure cash pickups, offset by an increase in Moneris fees and copier charges, and then we had some of that reprofiled. What we pay for code books has been reprofiled to supplies.
All right, under a KPR Moneris fees, how much would you pay in a year in every department? Like, what would that cost you?
I don't know if we know for our department.
Do you know?
No.
Bonnie? It's a big fee by the sound of it.
I don't have the exact dollar value, but it's almost $500,000.
Yeah, so something that I guess you're looking at to try to get around.
Absolutely.
Under revenue provincial, how is this revenue generated? Could you please provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue of last year? I think of COVID, but maybe not.
So we do get revenues from fees, so building accessibility plan reviews, fire and life safety plan reviews, design reviews, like boiler and pressure vessel system fittings and procedures, when we license contractors, propane, you know, when we issue propane gas and medical gas installer certificates, testing of pressure welders and brazers and the procedures around that. See, our department does a whole bunch of stuff. Approval of sewage treatment systems over 4,500 liters per day, permits to alter or install pressure systems, design reviews, registration and inspector. So registration for elevator inspectors and amusement ride installers.
Thank you. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Madam Mr. Chair. So, actually my colleague asked a question that I was just about to ask with the Moneris fees, $500,000. That's just for this department, for all the sections in your department. And I'm assuming that other departments that use are also paying these fees, significant cost. Okay. And how many highway enforcement officers are currently employed by the department? Is that did you answer that in terms of, I think, way stations or?
Oh, hand that over to Gail.
Okay.
Gail Boland, yes, we have 32 highway enforcement officers currently employed across the province, a couple of vacancies which we're working through right now.
And where would they be located, the bulk, I guess? Are they throughout the province? Or I guess they run the Avalon, there might be more of them.
Well, we have some in Corner. We have a few in Corner Brook, Foxtrap. There's, you know, are you talking about the vacancies or?
No, just the total where they're
total?
Currently allocated.
Yeah, sure. We have one HEO right now in Corner Brook. We have four in Foxtrap. We have five, six, in Grand Falls. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in Goobies. We have one in Happy Valley Goose Bay, one in Labrador City, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in Mount Pearl. We have four in Port of Bass, and we have four in Pinsbrook.
I'm sorry, and where in the last one?
Pinsbrook.
Pinsbrook?
Yes.
Thank you. No, that's good. If I could move on to 3.2.01,
yep.
Property and furnishings, the overage of $35,000, what was the reason for that?
So this past year, the overage, so we bought essentially as many laptops as we could afford, you know, for work from home related to COVID-19. So it's $34,800 for laptops.
Thank you. And 3.2.02, regional services, salaries. What's the reason for the $275,000 savings last year? I'm assuming vacancy is part of it. And why has the estimate for this year decreased by $108,000?
So the actual amount decrease was due to salary savings because of vacancies throughout the province and delays in recruitment processes. And then in terms of the salaries moving forward, the decrease is a result of the elimination of the funding for the 27th pay period, then offset by wage increases.
And for this year, is this just continuation of vacancies,
yep.
Or have you decided that this is that there are people now through attrition eliminated?
I believe it's just because of the pay period and wage offset by the wage increase.
Okay, that's for this year then.
Yep. And so last year it was vacancies and delays in recruitment.
Okay. Property furnishings, what's the reason for the $13,000 overrun last year?
So $13,000 was the cost of plexiglass in front counters in our regional offices due to COVID-19, and that was a requirement to reopen, you know, for the public health guidelines and to protect our staff.
Thank you. Revenue provincial, and what is the reason for the roughly $1.4 million in reduced revenue, and why is this estimate of revenue down by $430,000 this year?
So the decrease in revenue is primarily due to the offices being closed for counter service as a result of COVID-19. So obviously, when we were closed, we didn't process fees. And then higher than anticipated online electrical permits of just over $900,000, and that goes in the consolidated revenue fund. And then, moving forward, the decrease in revenue is we've reprofiled online electrical permit revenue to current account revenue.
Thank you. 3.2.03, collection services. Again, the reason for the increased estimate of $31,000 this year.
So that's the salary plan and approved salary increases. I also just want to add, I guess, that collections only recently came in our department, a few months ago. And so it moved from finance to our department. So it's a new part of our department.
Okay, for the collections.
Correct.
Okay. Under 3.3.01, occupation, health, and safety inspection salaries, what's the reason for the $800,000 in savings last year?
So we had
short-term vacancies, essentially three occupational health and safety officers, three industrial hygienists, and an occupational health and safety regional manager all had vacancies offset by salary increases. We found it particularly difficult to fill a hygienist position, and delays in recruitment led to the variance.
Purchase services, the reason for $67,000 in savings last year.
So we had fewer room rentals for investigations, taking statements in rural areas. We cost share occupational health and safety regulation working group and geotechnical engineers underground mine review fees. And so we had a delay in, I guess, incurring some of those costs. And we had radiology services costs, shredding and recycling costs.
Okay. 3.4.011, assistance to St. Lawrence Miners Dependent. How many people are currently receiving assistance through this program? There were 43, I think, last year.
40 this year.
40 this year. Yep. Thank you. 3.4.02, assistance to outside agencies. Why were no grants awarded last year? Because of COVID?
The decrease in $8,000 is no requirement for conference sponsorships during the year.
Thank you. And the provincial revenue, what was the source of the extra $6,000 in revenue?
So that is related to a timing difference where we get reimbursed for Workplace NL. So the last quarter of 2019-2020 costs for were not reimbursed until the first quarter of this year.
And, Mr. Chair, that's all I have at this point. Thank you on that section.
Thank you. Mr. O'Driscoll.
Knew that was going to happen sometime today. I just had a couple of questions. Back to 3.3.01 under purchase services.
One more. 3.3.01.
Okay. Under purchase services, could you please detail what services are included here and what explains last year's savings?
Sure. So I think we touched on that already. So purchase services here. We look at occupational health and safety regulation. We had delays in national cost sharing things around that working group. We had a geotechnical engineer's underground mine review. We had a lower than anticipated cost with radiology services, shredding, recycling services. And then we didn't need to rent as many rooms for investigations and taking statements in rural areas where we don't have government offices.
Not sure if this one was asked or not. This is my last one. Revenue provincial. Not sure if you answered that, but how was the revenue generated? And could you please provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue last year?
Sure. So under occupational health and safety, Workplace NL essentially reimburses us all these costs. You know, ultimately they're incurred by employers when they pay Workplace NL costs. So we spend the money and then Workplace NL pays us back. They're 100% recoverable from Workplace NL. So the revenue essentially reflects the reduction in salaries I guess just exactly what our costs were, they reimburse.
Okay. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. That's my last question in this. So I'd just like to thank everybody for your... I know what it's like when we get asked a question in our section, just as an MHA, and say, well, I'll get back to you. But to have all these answers here pretty quick is pretty impressive. So I'd like to thank you all for that.
Thank you, Mr. O'Driscoll. Mr. Dean?
No, and again, thank you very much for your answers. Thank you for appearing today. I think it's got to be one of the shorter estimates meetings. Good to be the lint trap.
Clerk?
3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive, digital government and services.
Shall 3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Oops.
Total.
Shall the total carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Shall I report the estimates of digital government and service and L departments? All in favor?
Aye.
Countryman, motion carried. I'd like to thank you all for being here today. And thank you to the substitutes that came as well. Appreciate that. So I'm going to ask for a mover to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Warr. All in favor?
Aye.
Good. Enjoy your rest of your day in the House, members, and everybody else in your workplace. Thank you.